The journey is conversations with ordinary people about stories of transformation and how we may have had setbacks in our life and how we persevered through those, how we've learned from those obstacles, and how they've, you know, maybe helped us on our path today. Well, welcome to The Journey. My name is Kevin Polke, and I am the host of The Journey, and we have a special guest with us today. Amy Schoenthal is an author of a children's book and now just getting ready to release her new book that we're going to have an opportunity to talk about. She has written a new book called The Setback Cycle, and we are so pleased to have you on the show and talking about your adventures as a journalist, as an author, and just as a leader in general. And we've had many guests over time on the journey, because the journey is based on Joseph Campbell's hero's journey. And so we talk a lot about developing resilience. How do we turn obstacles into opportunities? How do we move through setbacks and learn from them versus avoiding or hoping that they go away? So Amy, thank you so much for being with us today. And so when we first start with our guests, usually I start off with a question such as, when you have an opportunity to have fun, what do you do in your downtime? What do you do to have fun?
That is a fantastic first question. Yeah. And very unusual, but I love it. Mm. I do so many things to have fun. I live in a wonderful neighborhood called Sunnyside, which, as you said, I wrote the children's book about. And we have a little park right by my house and gathering with friends and family. Yesterday, it's March now, and yesterday was the first day it felt like spring in a very long time. And having everyone sort of out of their houses at the park, you know, bringing in food, seeing each other for, I think, the first time in a long time, and having all the kids and parents there was just so fun. And so I think socializing with friends is my number one way to have fun. And then, yeah, I have lots of hobbies. I love to read. I've gotten into ice skating as my daughter has started ice skating. So I like exercising with my husband. So there's lots of fun hobbies. And I think it's really wonderful to start out by getting to know someone through their hobbies versus what they do for a living.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you 100%. When I've had the opportunity over the years to work in more of a clinical setting, starting counseling, before we jump into what the problem is that leads them to start seeking therapy, I want to know, you know, what is it, what's their, it's called looking at their strengths, but I want to know what is their hobbies, what's their interest, what are the things that they, if they weren't working, what would they be doing? And because that usually tells me more about them as a person than the issues or the problems that have brought them to see me. So, that is awesome. How old is your daughter?
She's 5 and a half.
Five and a half. I think of like my young adult children. My son is 28, my daughter's 25 and a half now. And I think of those time periods of when they were little, that every one of those stages were just like my new favorite stage. And so 5 and a half is a very cool stage.
It really is. I really am loving it. She's like a real person, but also like still cute and little.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, we were outside yesterday as well, and it was warm, very windy, but it was warm out. And my, I guess it would be great niece, just turns two tomorrow. And she was walking me around grandma's backyard. And,
oh my God.
And so this would be, for her, this is the first time this year that she's been walking around in the backyard. So we were looking at everything. And so it was a very special moment. So, yeah, so I definitely enjoy being outside as well. So,
yeah.
So sure. Amy, tell us a little bit about, you know, where did you grow up? What were some of the things that you were interested in when you were growing up? What were some of your passions or what did you explore when you were younger?
I mean, I grew up here in the suburbs of New York City. And I honestly, this sounds so cliche, but I've always been a writer. I went to summer camp and everyone was playing basketball and swimming. And I was like walking around with my little notebook interviewing people, like trying to like write a camp newsletter. I mean, I also played sports. I did competitive dancing and I obviously did other things, but I've always, since childhood been a writer and wanted my writing to be published. So that's been a definitely a constant that I've brought with me into my adult life.
So when you think back to when you were a young person and this interest or intrigue about writing, but then also, like you just talked about, interviewing, right? So that aspect of being of course later being a journalist regarding that. And so tell us a little bit now, thinking back as an adult person, thinking back of the little Amy, what do you think it was that was so intriguing and so inviting regarding interviewing, getting to know people, and then writing their story?
I'm not sure. I think I was always just curious about other people's, stories really and their journeys and what I could learn from their journeys. So that's always been my motivation. Like, who are you? Who are you really? What are some more details about you? And then what motivates you? And then what can I learn from it? What takeaways do you have from your life that I can, apply to my own? That was really the inspiration for the book, if you think about it.
Sure, yeah. Well, and well, yeah, why don't we kind of jump into the setback cycle and what, like many times when I've talked to other authors and for myself, when I've written programs that I bring into the communities to talk about, workshops to talk about, there's a story behind that. And I've been yeah, so tell us a little bit about a little bit about the setback cycle. What is the book about, and what were some of the things that led into you wanting to write this?
Well, throughout my journalism career, I've interviewed hundreds of founders and leaders and people who have persevered through unexpected obstacles to find success. And I just noticed after doing this so many times, I just noticed that every single story and every like point of pride that people had when they shared their story seemed to be in the moment when they emerged from some sort of setback. And I just kept digging into that a little bit more because it wasn't always, we know the concept of learn from your mistakes or the concept of post-traumatic growth, but these setbacks that they were talking about weren't always mistakes and they weren't always traumas. There was something in the middle that I didn't feel had been really defined by business literature, psychology of business books and leadership books. And I found like hints of it here and there throughout my research, but no one had really explored this setback as a concept. And so I just kept going. I kept asking people about what setbacks they endured. I started going to executive coaches and psychologists, and I went to a neuroscientist to really ask, like, is this really a thing? And is there a proper framework that people can go through to really understand the concept of setbacks and how they can apply, what these leaders did to their own lives? And it turned out there is some fascinating neuroscience about why we persevere through setbacks and emerge with a lot of resilience on the other side. And it really is a very universal experience, and people are really sparking to the concept. And now, after people read it, they really see their own life experiences through a whole new lens. When you kind of like put it through the definition of a setback and you realize how many you've been through and where they brought you and where you otherwise may not have ended up had you not endured that setback.
Sure. Yes. I can think of like numerous examples in my own life where those what at the moment that seemed like here's hitting a bottom or some type of how am I going to recover from this element, and then it is in that moment or it is in that time period that we have choice, right? We can, I was, we talk about this idea that when adverse things happen, we can either become permanently despaired, we can like ignore it and suppress it and act like nothing's happened and go back to normal, or we can have this opportunity to say, to develop into something that we wouldn't have been if this setback wouldn't have happened.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And people know that, I think on a surface level, but really digging into this concept in a way that's very actionable and it helps people understand it and like know when to recognize their next step back and then work through it through these phases, it can really be transformational.
And I think, as Campbell talks about in the hero's journey, he talks about it from a story perspective or a metaphor, and that's why we love those movies and they speak to us because they tell a story. But to your point, they don't really break it down. We see the character in the story go through those setbacks, have the dark night of the soul or entering into the cave, but we don't necessarily always see what are the steps that we can break down. And that sounds like what you were able to do with the setback cycle.
Yeah, that was the idea, and that does seem to be the response that I'm getting from people who are reading it.
Perfect. So if you could maybe just give us a little bit of a taste of the neuroscience and just tell us a little bit about that and why do you think that's important for the reader to know that there is actually research from a neuroscience perspective about what parts of the brain are being activated when you are doing hard things?
So the neuroscience makes a lot of sense, even to those of us who are non-science people. When our brains undergo a setback, it tends to be a negative experience, and that results in a dopamine dip, right? So those dopamine dips, our brains are always working towards experiences that they think will be rewarding for us and away from negative experiences. So when you get a dopamine high, you're like, this is great. You keep going, you keep doing things exactly as you have been. It doesn't necessarily create space for creativity and ingenuity and innovation. That's okay. It's great if things are going well. But when you have the dopamine dip, your brain wants to do everything in its power to avoid having that experience again. It wants to move you away from that. And that's why the dips and the setbacks are so instrumental in learning and rewiring. So our brain's basal ganglia is sort of the command center, and the learning and the rewiring of our brain takes place in those dips, which makes sense because of course you are like really paying attention to things that are happening when they're negative because you want to do something else and you have to work a little harder. Your brain has to use more energy to figure out how to do something differently, versus doing things the same. And that's why, it's like when you're exercising, the muscles have to sort of break down before they can be rebuilt as strength. And it's the same thing in our brains.
Yeah, absolutely. So it makes perfect sense to me. And so if you can think of and I imagine you have numerous examples. So whatever
So many.
first comes to mind, but you talk about when we have a setback and we have that dopamine dip. Consequently, at the same time, this setback is initially perceived as a threat. And so we could get hijacked into this fight or flight, right? The sympathetic nervous system kicks in and we could go into this fight or flight aspect of it. So when you think of like some of the individuals you interviewed, either over time or for the book, what did they, how did they, how did a particular person maybe retrain themselves to not get hijacked into the fight or flight because of the setback being perceived as a threat and be able to look at it as an opportunity to innovate or develop or grow?
There are two bar owners in Louisville, Kentucky, and a lot of a lot of these stories. I wrote the book between 2021 and 2022, a little bit into 2023. A lot of these stories are about business owners who had to pivot their businesses coming out of the pandemic. And as you know, bar and restaurant owners, those industries were hit so hard. And there was one way to build a bar or restaurant. You get customers, you bring them into a physical space. And in 2020, so these two bar owners, there's a bar called Trouble Bar in Louisville, Kentucky. The two bar owners, their names are Nicole and Caitlin. And they were having an incredible first year. It was like the only, at the time, the only women-owned whiskey bar in Louisville. And they took so much pride in that. It was like a really big accomplishment. And people were very excited to have them there. They said it was like the best first year in business, 2019. And then, of course, 2020 hits, and they have to not only close their bars, but I think the governor of Kentucky banned the sale of liquor for the first few months of the pandemic. So they couldn't even do like the to-go window things that a lot of other cities were doing to help keep businesses afloat. So they had to just rethink everything they had built, redo everything that they had done. And they came up with such a brilliant idea. They said, well, we just stocked up on juices and mixers. Everyone's a little, worried. Everyone is isolated. Why don't we create a proper lemonade stand? And they did. They took the like sort of back dock of their loading dock of their bar, and they created a real lemonade stand as adults, as business owners. And the community showed up for them in such a way. There's like a print shop next door, and the print shop made postcards for them that said, "When life hands you trouble, make lemonade." And it is just the true sense of people taking the lemons that life gave them and actually turning it into legitimate lemonade. And they said they were able to pay like an entire month's rent from the proceeds they made through their lemonade stand. I mean, how incredible is that? And they've had a lot of ups and downs since then, but that is just like your business being decimated. How are you going to turn things around? And just getting incredibly, incredibly creative and doing what you can with what you have.
So when you were interviewing those two, obviously super out of the box thinking ladies, right? That they were able to pivot, not completely go out of the industry, but pivot. When you were meeting with them, and obviously many people, either did one of a couple things. They either went victim and were hoping someone was going to rescue them, or they got angry and wanted a scapegoat, right? You want to figure a way around whatever sanctions that were being placed on them at the time. And some people just shut down, right? They just when you were when if you think back about when you were meeting with them, what did they share with you about not falling into those temptations? Because they're there for all of us. When we have some kind of setback, either relationally or pandemic-wise or whatever it may be, what do you recall when you met with them about what did they do to not fall into those temptations?
I don't know that they didn't, right? I think they may have, experienced some of those like real periods of rumination. There is, I have a section in the book called Blame and Shame. It is so easy when you have a setback to completely blame yourself and fall into a spiral of shame and just rumination. And I can't believe I did that. I am such a failure. I will never be the same. That's rumination. There is also, a lot of people, I think you were alluding to this, just get into this place of blame where they decide someone else is responsible for all their problems. It is entirely someone else's fault. And they just get into this resentment spiral. And so you can either get into resentment or rumination. You can get into blame or you can get into shame. It is always, always, almost always a combination of both. It is almost never entirely your fault, and it is almost never entirely someone else's fault. And I don't know, Nicole and Caitlin didn't really go into like, they were obviously scared. They were terrified for their industry, for their bar, for the workers. They had to help all of their employees, get on certain insurance and recovery plans and all kinds of things like that, get the PPP relief. That was a whole logistical situation for business owners at that time. And yeah, they were terrified. They were terrified, but they didn't fall into rumination. They said, okay, let's get everyone what they need. Let's make sure everyone is safe. Let's make sure everyone is healthy. And then let's figure out what we can do, if anything, to keep our business afloat. And that's just it. And they kept going. You know, the lemonade stand was one thing they did to keep their business afloat during that time. They had to, you know, get creative and do all kinds of other things. They had been marketing consultants, you know, in a prior life, and they took on some freelance work, just again, just to pay the bills, to pay their own rent, to pay the rent for the bar. You know, they really got scrappy. And when everything reopened, I mean, they had the most glorious celebration. It was so wonderful. The whole community came out to support them because, right, they owned a bar, but they had really just created a community. They had created a space for people to gather and congregate and celebrate. And that is exactly what Trouble Bar is today.
Well, and it reminds me of your first story today about your neighborhood, right? And
Yeah.
that you know the work that we put into people, investing in people and
Yeah.
creating that community, that loyalty that comes from that, and I imagine that through that, the same theme of what they originally wanted to create was the same theme that helped them be their why to persevere
Yep,
during the
exactly.
pandemic. Yeah.
Exactly.
It reminds me of a friend of mine. His father had started a company where they put on trade shows. So they do all the behind the scenes to put together these huge monstrous trade shows, you know, for in you know in the biggest cities in the United States. That this is the company that puts that together. And
Yeah.
so, as you can imagine, that when the pandemic hit, everything got shut down, and we never knew how long it was going to look. But then they had, you know, years worth of work just being canceled. And because we didn't, you know, no one knew how long these sanctions were going to be put in place, how long this is, when is the, you know, when are we going to be able to get the virus under some level of control?
Yeah.
And I remember talking to him. His first name's Mike, and I remember talking to him and all the things that you said, because we're all in this, what's next? And we can either go into the sky's falling element of what's the next bad news that's coming. I remember him telling me his biggest concern was his employees, because
Yeah, of course.
they were the key to running his business. Meaning, you know, we could take that for, you know, of course, Kevin, that's every business are those key employees. But he was like, no, Kevin, you don't understand. Not everyone knows how to do this work. And I
No.
won't, once the doors open back up again, if I don't have access to them and I can't hire them back because they went and worked somewhere else, I don't know. Even when they allow us to start doing trade shows again, I don't know if I'll have the right employees to do it. So
Exactly.
I mean, and it didn't come right away, but he, you know, struggled and tried to figure out, and he only had so much, cash reserves and capital to keep them on the payroll. And then I don't remember if it was him or his partner's brother, but they came up with the idea of a commercial cleaning business. And so
Wow.
they ended up hiring out, and of course, you know, I mean, that was genius, because anytime that there was a possible exposure to COVID, you had to call in the cavalry to
Yeah,
clean,
that's right. Oh my
clean
God.
everything out, right? And especially like for myself, you know, we were considered essential workers, and
Yeah.
so we would still be in the office, and there was a lot of telemedicine that was happening, but we were still in person. And he was able, through that innovation, keep those key individuals employed. And then when things started opening back up, they switched back to the business, and now they have two successful businesses again. And so it's similar to what you just talked about with these young ladies in Louisville with the Troubles Bar, that of the innovation just increases that brand loyalty and that community. So that's a wonderful story.
Yeah, it really is.
So Amy, as you're thinking as you yourself were writing this book, right? And what were some things that you either were conf that that confirmed some hunches that you had, or you learned about yourself, or you learned that you wouldn't have learned if you wouldn't have taken on this enormous project?
So much. Well, the most surprising thing I learned was how many of us really sort of float along or drift willingly into setbacks without even realizing it. And that's why phase one, so there's four phases of the setback cycle: establish, embrace, explore, and emerge. And that surprise was why phase one is called establish, because establishing that you are in or entering into a setback is not as intuitive as one may think. You would think these things are obvious. But yeah, the real, life-changing, life-altering, bonk you over the head setbacks, yes, those are obvious. Getting laid off, a partner requesting a divorce, those are the very obvious setbacks. But then there's the more subtle ones: staying in a job too long, even if you're disengaged, floating along, just like letting inertia pull you forward instead of going somewhere and getting up every day to do something because of conscious choice. Those are all setbacks. And so often we don't wake ourselves up early enough to course correct until we're so far along that it's much harder to make that pivot. That was a hunch I had. And once I started asking if this was a common experience, I was very much validated in that hunch. And not only was I validated, but I could not believe how common it was. And that was really interesting. And that's one of the more, I think, surprising things that people are taking away from this book. I have an exercise in the establish phase when I go into that called the alarm clock checklist. And it's something you can actually work your way through if you think you might be like drifting along into a setback without realizing it. And what other people are saying is, I was worried I was going into a setback, so I took your alarm clock checklist. And it turned out that was exactly what I needed to remind myself how engaged I am in my work. So it's a nice exercise to just give you a little bit of a reset moment of, should I be here? Should I not? Is there something else I should be doing? Am I in a setback? Am I not? Oh, hey, I'm actually exactly where I am meant to be. So it's nice to just take stock of that and have a check-in with yourself.
No, I mean, I'm thinking of numerous examples in my own life, as well as of that. I think the phrase that I've used is that I've stayed too long. I knew intuitively, I knew that I should move on, but the fear of the unknown, the fear of the change and not knowing would kept me going, all right, well, this, I may not be liking what's happening, but I'm familiar with this not liking it, and I can tolerate it at least for blank amount of time. It almost seems inevitably that somewhere along that is when something then comes and it is a bigger thump on my head that said, going, all right, Kevin. And sometimes, I think of how my bodybuilding career ended. That was a pretty big thump that that I could not ignore anymore. And I had ignored quite a few indicators that I've been, it's time to move on and let this part of your life go. But my identity was so wrapped up in
Yep, that
it.
happens to so many of us. It is really such a universal experience.
Yeah. And I think, as I'm thinking specifically of athletes, that we will have a tendency to stay too long.
Oh,
And that,
absolutely.
there's endless amount of other careers too that will stay too long, or the or in relationships, to your
Oh,
point
yeah.
earlier. And I remember just recently I was working with a client, I was working with my some counselors that I was doing supervision with, and they were talking about a scenario where individuals were separated, but not they were separate, not living together, but they were coming to counseling, but they didn't necessarily for couples counseling, but didn't necessarily talk about why they were they were still gridlocked. There was no vulnerability. There was no willingness to be open, to move forward. They weren't even able to identify what goals did they want to work on. And I asked the counselor, I said, when you meet with them one-on-one, because that was the phase that we that would be
Yeah.
in with the with the couple, I said, ask each one of them individually, who else is in part of the story?
Yeah.
Or what
Yeah.
else is part of the story? Because if we don't know what else is part of the story, you know, meaning that maybe they're staying because they don't believe in divorce because of religious reasons or family reasons.
Yeah.
So I may not be willing to work on the marriage, but I'm not willing to move
Yeah.
away from their marriage either because of some.
Yeah. Some identity that they are holding very tightly to that maybe was core to their values for a period of time, but no longer is. You know, our identities are going to shift over the course of their lives. And I do actually have a story in the book of someone who was raised very religious, Midwest, conservative values, and had got married very young, and she had a really hard time acknowledging that it was time for a divorce because that idea was so shunned by her community. So yeah, we go there in the book.
Yeah, well, and I think it's just like I was when I was working with that therapist, it is so important for us to expose, to have conversations about it and give people permission to look at it because it's part of the experience, even if I'm not acknowledging it or bringing it to my consciousness.
That's right. That's right.
So if there was, and I know that this is a loaded question, so I know it's not even fair what I'm about to ask. So if there was one takeaway that you would want the audience, you know, the reader who's reading the book and then our listeners to buy your book, what would be one if there was a theme or a takeaway that you were hoping to accomplish by writing this book, what comes to mind?
I really just want everyone to read this book and be either inspired by the stories that they're reading and or to see a little bit of themselves and their own experiences within these stories. And that's what's happening. You know, if you understand your own life experiences through a new lens, it gives you so many more tools to be able to work through the next setback or the next obstacle. It gives you that resilience without you having to go out and build it yourself, you know, because you've already done it. But by reading this book and understanding the framework, you can now understand all that you are capable of because of what you've been through and what you can do. And that's really the takeaway. You know, the book has this orange gradient in the cover, and that's a very optimistic color because this book is about setbacks, but it is a very hopeful book. It is all about, you know, seeing yourself for all that you might be capable of, for all the possibilities ahead of you, even when you're in those inevitably not fun moments.
I think I am so I pre-ordered it a couple of weeks ago
Oh, good. Thank you.
and I am looking forward to reading it and it so parallels much I'm looking forward to reading it because I think it'll complement some of the work that I'm doing when I work with schools and work with nonprofits and businesses in
Yes.
leadership development right now. But I think it sounds like everything you're sharing, you've gone definitely a couple layers deeper than and I think that is a huge like I said, I'm very looking forward to being able to read it and be inspired by it as well. So Amy, what would be if someone who's listening wanted to get a copy, get a hold of you, get in contact with you, what's the best way for them to do that? And what's the best way to pre-order your book?
You could pre-order the book on Amazon. It's called The Setback Cycle. You can pre-order it at Amazon, Barnes and Noble, your local indie bookstore. And if you want more information about the book, I have a little microsite up called thesetbackcycle.com. You can follow me on Instagram at Amy Show or on LinkedIn. I'm Amy Schoenthal. I think that's it. Those are enough options. You'll find me.
Perfect. And your website is does a great job of navigating through and shows some of the individuals that you have had a chance to meet and interview over time. And there's a couple interviews that you've done on some podcasts as well as some video as well. So yes, I would encourage anyone to check out your work and check out the stories that you have already captured. When is the Setback Cycle coming out?
March 19th, it'll be available. So I don't know when this is going to go live, but right now we're only 2 weeks away.
Yep. So it'll be about a week before your
Perfect.
book is released. So this will be perfect. So
Perfect. So if you pre-order it now, it'll arrive at your doorstep on March 19th and you'll have
yeah.
it.
Perfect. Well, Amy, thank you so much for being with us today. And I definitely look forward to not only reading The Setback Cycle, but having future conversations with you as you are going through this next aspect of your book tour and all the adventures that that's going to open up for you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I really appreciate that.
Well, thank you. So, just as you've heard us numerous times talk about Joseph Campbell's The Hero's Journey, I do believe that this is a huge compliment and a workbook to walk along as you are doing your own journey. As we are going to have setbacks, definitely check out Amy's The Setback Cycles book so that you can have some more tools in your toolkit to move through those things. As always, thank you for being here, and I look forward to being with you next week.